from the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal. This is Free Expression with Jerry Baker.
Hello and welcome to Free Expression from the Wall Street Journal. I'm Jerry Baker, editor-at-large of the Journal. If you're not already a subscriber, please do sign up to Free Expression wherever you get your podcasts. This week, as an elite US university is in effect shut down by pro-Palestinian protesters, and as Jewish students are warned to stay away from campus for their own safety, we take a look at what's really happening in this country's supposedly elite colleges. How did the nation's most prestigious places of higher education become hotbeds of hatred and fanatical extremism? And what can we do to reverse the tide? A week ago, the president of Columbia University, the Ivy League school in New York City, called in the police to remove more than 100 anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian demonstrators who'd camped out on the university's main quad. President Manoush Shafiq hoped that clearing them out would mark the end of the protests and deflect criticism that her university had, like so many other elite colleges, become home to extremist, anti-American, anti-Israeli, and anti-Semitic extremists. But this week, the protesters were back in even greater numbers, paralyzing the campus. The administration replaced regular classes with remote Zoom sessions for the students, whose tuition costs, remember, are about $80,000 a year. As of Wednesday morning, when we are recording this podcast, the president's ultimatum to the students to leave had been extended as negotiations continued. But it's not just Columbia. It was mayhem at New York University, Yale, and elsewhere. Radical political protests at universities is, of course, nothing new. But what's particularly shocking right now are the public displays of anti-Semitism. Last week, a student wearing a Star of David insignia was stabbed in the eye by a protester waving a Palestinian flag. And in this Passover week, some protesters at Columbia waved Hezbollah banners and taunted some Jewish students with cries such as, "The 7th of October is going to be every day for you." Other Jewish students were told to, quote, "go back to Poland." We can only guess what that's supposed to mean. A rabbi attached to the Columbia campus sent a note to Jewish students urging them to stay away for their own safety. Now, we've been warned a lot in the last few years about the rise of far-right racism and anti-Semitism, but it's not the Ku Klux Klan or the Proud Boys taking over American campuses. It's the American left. But their political leaders seem somehow, well, somewhat equivocal this time in their condemnation of this kind of racism. President Joe Biden told reporters this week, "I condemn the anti-Semitic protests, but I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians." Doesn't that sound a little like the supposedly infamous "good people on both sides" remark from President Donald Trump after the violence at Charlottesville in 2017 that supposedly was the main reason why Joe Biden decided to run for president in 2020, after all, to tackle this extremism and racism that we see everywhere? Earlier this week, Shai Davidi, an assistant professor at Columbia Business School, announced on social media that he planned to enter the university's main campus and hold a sit-in in the area of the pro-Palestinian demonstrators. But the university then deactivated Davidi's Columbia ID card, preventing him from accessing the main campus. Davidi's called the conditions at Columbia like Germany in 1938, when Jews were expelled from universities, and he's threatened to sue the college. So for an eyewitness account of what's going on at Columbia and a broader discussion of what's happening in American universities, I'm pleased to say that Shai Davidi joins me now. Shai, thanks very much for joining Free Expression.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And more important, thank you for covering this very important topic.
Well, you tell us if you would. Let's start with this because you've been in the news a bit and we've seen what's been happening to you. Give us your account of what's been happening at Columbia from your perspective and how you came to be, it seems, at one point actually excluded from the campus. Give us the background, what you've been doing leading up to this week.
Yeah, so the story starts at October 9th. And this is important. The chronology is extremely important. On October 9th, we had a student organization, Students for Justice in Palestine, publish a letter. And it refers to yesterday's events. So it was written on October 8th. And they published a letter saying that yesterday's event, meaning this October 7th massacre by Hamas, was a historic day for the Palestinian resistance. And it goes on and on to excuse and justify and celebrate the massacre. This is before Israel has even responded. This is while Israel was still fighting terrorists on the ground to stop them from killing more and more innocent children, teenagers, the elderly, and kidnapping and raping. So it was never about anti-war. It was never about a ceasefire. It was always about support for Hamas. And I've been alerting about this on my social media, on Twitter, at Shai Davidi. And for 6 months, I've been saying this is what's happening. And it's been slowly, then quickly, then more quickly escalating into open support for Hamas, culminating in Saturday, where we had a protester, not an outside agitator, a student at Columbia, a protester, holding a sign saying, Al-Qassam Brigade's your next target, with an arrow pointing at Jewish students, American Jewish students, not Israeli Jewish students. Al-Qassam Brigade's is the military wing of Hamas. So we have students, radicals at Columbia, pointing Hamas towards Jewish American students to kill them.
So we saw this after, as you describe it, after October 7th, we saw this horrifically across many American campuses celebrating the events of October the 7th, threatening Jewish students. But as I understand it, Columbia, the new president there, Manu Shafiq, who'd literally just taken over as president just before October the 7th, she did move to actually take action, didn't she, against the Students for Justice in Palestine? In fact, were they not disciplined or barred from holding events? Tell us what the immediate response of the authorities was.
Yeah, so there was no immediate response. The first response came in mid-November. And one thing that you need to understand the entire past 6 months of Colombia is that there's been two Colombias. There's the Colombia on paper, meaning what they say, what they write to the media, what they put on their website, and there's been a Colombia on the ground, which is what they do. So on mid-November, Colombia announced that it's suspending SJP on the grounds that they have been consistently violating school policy and engaging in unauthorized protests using violent rhetoric. Ever since mid-November, these organizations have been operating on campus with complete impunity. They've been escalating their rhetoric. It came to a point where they brought in an actual member of the PFLP, the Popular Front Liberation of Palestine, which is a U.S.-designated terror organization. They brought him to speak to students. This is Khaled Barkat, and he spoke to students, telling them about how his friends in Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and the PFLP in Gaza are emboldened by what they're seeing at Columbia. Then they had another person, Charlotte Keats, who's Khaled Barkat's wife. She told the students at this event that they should openly embrace the armed resistance, openly embrace Hamas, and that October 7th was a necessary action.
But this event was on the Columbia campus, was it?
This was supposed to be on Columbia's campus. A Jewish PhD student that I've been in touch with complained. So it was moved to Barnard College. And this is the irony, the Center for Women's Studies.
Yeah, very popular academic discipline on the Gaza Strip.
Exactly. And then the Jewish student again complained, and it was moved to virtual, but it was from a dorm room at Barnard. The four organizers were supposedly suspended 3 weeks ago for inviting terrorists to campus. Those four seemingly suspended organizers are right now in the illegal encampment. They are the leaders of the illegal encampment.
Are they students?
Yeah, students.
Yeah, they're Columbia or Barnard students.
They're not even ashamed to show their faces, their names, and tell their stories. As I said, there's two Columbias. There's Columbia in writing and Columbia in practice. And what we have now is that Columbia is negotiating with the illegal encampment. They are capitulating to their demands. And the only people that are not involved in those negotiations are the Jews.
Is that right? The Jewish groups are not represented?
No, they're not represented.
So it's, what is it, the administration and the various pro-Palestinian student groups?
No, I'm sorry, they're not pro-Palestinian. You can support Palestine and oppose Hamas. They are pro-Hamas.
One of the things I wanted to talk to you a bit about is, some people say, look, of course there are obnoxious, horrific extremists who support Hamas, but the majority of these protesters are actually, you know, they're pro-Palestinian. Some of them explicitly reject Hamas and reject terrorism and condemn what happened on October 7th.
No, that's not true.
You don't think that's true?
It's not that I don't think it's true. It is not true. Show me records of them saying that they condemn Hamas. You have to remember, Hamas also says that they are the only voice of the Palestinian people, despite Palestinians fighting Hamas and opposing Hamas and telling them, no, you do not speak for us, there's another way. So we cannot call these people and these radical organizers pro-Palestine. One way to support Palestine is through armed resistance that sees rape as a necessary act. But there are other ways, and there are many vocal Palestinians that are opposing Hamas. And by the way, the Middle East has very, very few Palestinians who have been democratically elected by their people. All of those people are in Israel and serve in Israel's parliament. And one of those people is Mansour Abbas, who was a member of the government of Israel, a Palestinian man who was democratically elected. And he has said that Hamas does not speak for Palestinian people and does not stand for Muslim values. So by conflating Palestine with Hamas, I think the media is doing a disservice to the Palestinian people.
I couldn't agree more. By the way, we're recording this on Wednesday morning as it stands, and you can give us an update maybe from up there, but I'm in New York, not far from the Columbia campus. But as it stands, there is still this very large demonstration on the main campus.
No, it's an illegal encampment.
Sorry, it's an illegal encampment. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So just for clarification, you're saying that everybody there is, whatever they may say they are, they're pro-Hamas.
That's not what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. No, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth.
Yeah.
What I'm genuinely trying to understand is the extent to which there are Hamas PLFP agitators there who are agitating a wider group, or I'm trying to get a sense of who these people are in their various different guises.
I have a very clear answer for this, and it comes in a form of a question. Let me ask you, when you see the hundreds of thousands of Germans Heil Hitlering in the 1930s, do you believe that each and every one of them wanted to exterminate 6 million Jews in Auschwitz?
Oh, I mean, you know, I've read Hitler's Willing Executioners and other books, and I've, you know, we were there. That's, to be honest, that's a conversation about time. I'm genuinely trying to get your sense.
No, this is important.
Well, we could have a discussion about the extent to which Germans knowingly tolerated the excesses.
You hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Even if they don't openly say Hamas should kill people and rape.
Honestly, I'm really not trying to be disputatious. I'm genuinely simply trying to get a sense of what is going on, of who these people are. And
that's what I'm trying to answer. And so please let me answer.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is that these people, not all of them believe that Hamas is right. Not all of them believe that all Israeli women should be raped as an act of resistance, but they are tolerating the radical leaders that are saying, and when they chant, kill all Zionists, it's like Heil Hitlering. You don't have to believe in killing all the Jews by giving your support to the machine that kills all the Jews. So I will not excuse them for, yes, there are very, very many good people there. But if you've seen the videos, they have been brainwashed. They are doing a brainwashing, and many of them are good people. Their voices have been co-opted. They really care about the immense suffering in Gaza. And there is immense suffering in Gaza, just like there is immense suffering in the southern border of Israel. There is immense suffering. And we should not downplay it. But many of these people are people that came with like good intentions and have been brainwashed, and their voices have been co-opted by radicals who openly support Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and the PFLP, and the Houthis, who are shooting missiles at American ships, and Iran. They've openly supported Iran's attack on Israel. And suggesting anything, or even like questioning that, is wrong.
100%. I agree. The other question, the other point that raised again, I'm sort of to some extent playing devil's advocate here, and we've all seen these horrific images of people shouting pro-Hamas slogans and intimidating Jewish students and this kind of stuff. Another defense, if you like, that's raised is actually these are not students. These are, you know, their agitators have come up, this is a big city, New York City. There are organized activist pro-Hamas groups who've come in and have kind of infiltrated it. And again, I'm trying to get a sense of how much truth is there to that.
Complete BS. It's complete BS for two reasons. One, we have been covering who the people in the illegal encampments are. I literally just told you about a student, a Columbia student, holding a sign saying Al-Qassam Brigade is your next target. And you're asking me about outside agitators. And these people are documented. You know, I told you about a Columbia student who invited a PFLP terrorist onto campus, and you're asking me about outside agitators. So that's one thing. The other thing is, from the very first moment, the students' organizers at Columbia, SJP, have been working hand in hand with an organization from outside campus called Within Our Lifetime. Within Our Lifetime is an organization that in 2021, after its protests, its members went on a hunt for Jews, found a man called Joey Borgen, and beat him to pulp in May 2021. Some of them are spending up to 7 years in prison. Do you know what Within Our Lifetimes was called before it changed its name? It was called Students for Justice in Palestine, New York City. So they're working hand in hand. The new media trick that President Shafik with Mayor Adams is trying to do in order to palisade the Jews is saying their outside agitators will push them out. It's been hand in hand. It's all on my social media. From the very first big protest, they brought Within Our Lifetimes to support them, and they've been working with them consistently. So don't downplay it.
So Shai, I'm asking you questions because it is widely reported. We've reported, others have reported that, yes, that most of these are students. Some people have said, I've read reporting saying, actually, of course, there are some students. There are always terrible extremist students.
No, but I want to say...
Please, I'm not challenging you or doubting what you're saying.
Yes.
I'm simply asking you to describe the reality.
No, I'm not saying you are. I'm saying you as like people in the media have been... And, you know, something that bugs me, not just as a Jew and as an Israeli, but as a professor. The media should stop infantilizing 19, 20, 21, and 22-year-old adults. People their age are risking their lives in the military to protect the U.S. People their age serve in the police and fire stations. People their age pay taxes. People their age have jobs. People their age have children of their own. We need to start dealing with these people as adults, stop infantilizing them, because when we infantilize them, we downplay the entire problem. And when America will realize that the problem is serious, it might be too late.
You've painted a very clear picture of what's going on, and thank you for that. And by the way, again, there's nothing surprising really about this. We've seen this on so many campuses across America. We know that this is not a small problem. It's not in any way unique to Columbia. It is a significant factor on American campuses that significant number of students have these extreme terrorist-sympathizing, terrorist-supporting, radical, anti-Semitic views and express them in ways that are intolerable, despicable, and I think the most decent people would say should have absolutely no place in any society, let alone on a university campus committed to intellectual inquiry.
I will add one thing for your description, because I think that's an apt description and I couldn't have said it better. The only thing that's missing is that this is not grassroots. This is not spontaneous. This is organized on a national level.
So that is an interesting question. Who is doing this? I mean, you've mentioned these groups, you know, Students for Justice in Palestine. You're obviously very close to it. You've heard, who is actually behind this? You know, who are these organizations? Who are these people? Because again, one of the things that looked very suspicious about the Columbia campus, suddenly all those tents showed up that looked like they'd all been bought from the same wholesale tent supplier, you know, from somebody. They weren't just random acts of individual expression. Who is behind it?
You mentioned the tents. I just want to say one thing. The tents are showing up in every campus, and notice it's the same types of camps in every campus. So let me tell you a little bit. It'll take me 2 or 3 minutes if that's
okay. Go ahead.
So Students in Justice in Palestine was created by a man called Hatem Bazian when he was a PhD student at Berkeley. He's now a tenured professor at Berkeley. Hatem Bazian was a frequent fundraiser for a organization called the Holy Land Foundation. The Holy Land Foundation was a 503 fundraising arm that was dismantled by the U.S. Treasury for giving material support for Hamas in the early 2000s. So the man that started the National Students for Justice in Palestine then was a fundraiser for Hamas. This man, who's now a tenured professor, created a new organization called American Muslims for Palestine. 9 out of the 12 people who are in the board of American Muslims for Palestine were in the boards of the Holy Land Foundation and other organizations that were dismantled for giving material support for Hamas. One of those people is Dr. Usama Abu Rashid, who's the executive director of American Muslims for Palestine. He, and you can find everything, it's on my social media, it's all documented. He wrote a blog post on the website of the Al-Qassam Brigade, the Hamas military wing. So he has a blog post there. Another person there is called Tahir Harzallah, who is the director of outreach and grassroots organizing. He is in charge of basically linking AMP, American Muslims for Palestine, with the Students Justice in Palestine chapters all over the country. And third thing you need to know, you have Tariq Halim, who's the education coordinator of American Muslims for Palestine. Each and every one of them, they have videos of the most anti-Semitic, anti-American things. Everything's on my social media feed, and you can go and look for it. The last thing you should know is that American Muslims for Palestine has another organization. They created a lobby arm who, since October 7th, has multiple times been on the Hill meeting with Rashida Tlaib, Cori Bush, the only two people that voted against barring Hamas rapists from entering the United States. They've been meeting with AOC. They've been meeting with Ilhan Omar, who, by the way, her daughter is one of the main radical organizers and was arrested at Columbia. So if you ask, like, who is behind this? I've been tweeting about this for 6 months, and all of the information is out there about Within Our Lifetime, about Students for Justice in Palestine, about American Muslims for Palestine, about Sami Doon. And by the way, all of those things are with videos, with screenshots. It's not me. Don't take my words for it. Take their words for it. And honestly, I just ask people to educate themselves before they weigh in and embarrass themselves by saying things like, this is, you know, peaceful, this is spontaneous, this is grassroots.
I'll certainly look at that myself, and I urge listeners to do so. The people you're talking about, they're American citizens living in, I mean, I'm just wondering what they're, you know, again, Hamas is a proscribed organization. Some of these others are proscribed organizations. Are these people, you know, at liberty to promote this kind of yes. hatred and incitement?
So Hatem Bazian is a naturalized American. Dr. Osama Abu Rashid, who wrote for the Hamas and has met with Hamas, is a naturalized U.S. citizen. Tahir Khazala is a natural U.S. citizen, all of the board. You know, and again, don't take my word for it. Jonathan Shanzer from the FDD, the think tank for freedom, democracy, and defense, has given more than a dozen briefings on the Hill in Washington about SJP and AMP. There is recordings of him talking about them, tying them directly to Hamas, tying them directly to Qatari money. And him and the FDD have been raising the alarm for at least a decade, if not more. And now when it's coming to a head, people are still not heeding the alarm. And the problem is that this will not end with Colombia and this will not end with Jews. And people, I guess, do not understand that.
Absolutely. I'm going to take a short break there. When I come back, we'll have more with Shai Davidi, an assistant professor of business at Columbia Business School, talking about the protests there at Columbia University in the last week, but also the wider condition of higher education in America. Stay with us.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
You're listening to Free Expression with Jerry Baker. Don't forget, you can listen to the latest episode anytime on your smart speaker. Just say, play the Opinion Free Expression podcast. Now, back to Jerry Baker.
Welcome back. I'm back with Shai Davidi, an assistant professor of business at Columbia University. We're talking about the student protests there and around the country. I want to talk also because a lot of things I want to cover. One is the faculty. We've talked about the students, and you've given a very clear picture there of the students who are involved in this. But it does appear also, and again, you can give us a sense because you're there. And again, this won't come as a surprise given what we've seen at other universities. And we know generally the tenor of faculties of so many American elite universities, that these people seem to enjoy significant support among the faculty too. Would you say that's true?
Oh, yeah. So first of all, you have to understand one important thing. And I tell you that as a professor at Columbia, you don't need to be smart to be a professor at Columbia. All you need is to have a PhD. And I tell you, as someone who I live with these people, I know them. They're not smarter than you or anyone else. The only difference is that they have perseverance to write a dissertation and they have a PhD. So that's the important thing. Now, you need to understand that many of these faculty have been radicalizing the students. So we have Joseph Massad, who on October 8th wrote a blog post on electronicintifada.com describing the massacre of Jews as awesome. And on the blog post, you can see the picture at the top is the Hamas brigades that did the massacre. You got Hamid Dabishi, who for years, for decades, has been saying that Zionism is the root of all evil. You have Catherine Frank at the law school, who has said that Israeli students who have served in the IDF are a danger on U.S. campuses. Not just that they, you know, depending on who they are, but they're a danger. You have Rashid Khalidi, the Edward Said Chair of History of the Middle East. So it's a very respected man. You know, all you need to know about him is to Google Rashid Khalidi, PLO spokesperson, 1970s. That's all you need to know about him. And you have all these professors. You get Muhammad Abdu, right? A visiting professor who was hired after October 7th, not before, after October 7th, and who has said that he doesn't support Hamas, but he is Hamas, but he identifies with Hamas and Hezbollah and has called for the end of the occupation of Turtle Island. Do you know what Turtle Island is?
No.
It's the United States of America and Canada.
Oh, right.
He said that the same fight that is happening in Rafah should happen in New York City. So you have all these professors. By the way, this is the professor that President Shafiq in Congress lied under oath and said he'd been terminated and grading classes. And Elise Stefanik caught her in a lie and said, yeah. No, he's right now in the illegal encampment indoctrinating the students. Are you going to change your testimony? The last I've checked, if you need to check your testimony, that means that you lied before. So these are the professors that have been indoctrinating the students and radicalizing them. And yes, they have been also brainwashing the well-meaning professors around them. Because you got to remember something. When Jews were being sent to the gas chambers in Auschwitz, the University of Berlin was still operating. University of Munich and Frankfurt and Heidelberg, they were still in business. And there were professors teaching. The only thing that was missing is Jews, Jewish students and Jewish professors. But there were many good German people, well-meaning German people that were just like good people that were keeping the university afloat. And just like I was barred entry from Columbia by the COO, Cass Holloway, there were Jewish professors that were barred entry from the University of Berlin and Munich and Frankfurt and Heidelberg by the COOs, by the administrators.
Tell us a little bit about that incident, because again, we did see it and I mentioned it in my introduction. But tell us what happened this week when you were barred from the campus.
Yeah. So after seeing the horrific open support for Hamas on Saturday evening, and I spent most Saturday nights awake until 4 a.m. just trying to make sure that the students are safe. So texting with Jewish students, texting with different organizations of how do we make sure our students are safe. And I decided that I need to go and show the students that we are safe everywhere. So I emailed the university, the president, the senior vice president, the general counsel, and the COO. And I told them, this was Sunday morning, 7 a.m. I told them, Monday morning, I plan to come to campus and peacefully sit in the illegal encampment, because the illegal encampment is in a public space on campus, and I, as a professor, have the right to be there. I did not get a response. So in midday on Sunday, I emailed them again. And again, I did not get a response. So I emailed them again at night, and Sunday night. I said, this is serious. I need police protection or something, because I don't want to risk my life. On the night between Sunday and Monday, I got an email from Cass Holloway, the COO, saying that if I wish to stage a counter protest, they're happy to accommodate me in a different place on campus. And I said, no, this is not a counter protest. This is me, a professor, who is exercising his right to be in a public space on campus, and you need to protect me. And then I showed up on Monday morning, and the COO and the assistant vice president of public safety were waiting for me in the front gate. They deactivated my ID, and they told me, we cannot let you in. We cannot guarantee your safety.
Right.
And again, like to insinuate, you can see in one of the videos that I lose my cool. I very rarely lose my cool, but I lost my cool because they insinuated that being Jewish, publicly Jewish on campus, is a form of protest. And if you do that, if you say that being Jewish is a protest, then you're basically denying us our civil right to be just like anyone else, wherever they want, on public spaces.
Tell us, Shai, about the mood among Jewish students and maybe some Jewish faculty too. I mean, we've seen again, and we've seen these terrible images. We've read some of these stories. We saw that extraordinary message from a rabbi last week. You know, essentially it's the same message that you were that you were given more bluntly, that, you know, that the university can't guarantee your safety, so don't go to campus. You know, this is a major American university in the major American global city in 2024, and Jews are being essentially warned away from going to their place of study?
Yeah, and you know, one thing that I would add to that is that when you say that the rabbi or the university told them that they cannot keep them safe, the NYPD also said that, basically. The NYPD has said that President Shafiq is not allowing them on campus because it's a private institution, and therefore the NYPD cannot keep Jewish New Yorkers safe. Yeah, it's unacceptable. I mean, it's amazing and unacceptable, and I really don't know how we got to this point. Most of the Jewish students are not on campus. You should know this.
Is that right?
Most of them fled, and I don't use this word lightly. They didn't leave. They fled between Saturday night and Sunday night. Yesterday, I was at an event, second night of Passover, with some Jewish students, and I just asked them, how are you doing? And the stories they told me, like, I've been following this and I've been documenting this since October 12th. The stories they told me broke my heart. They apparently have a WhatsApp group called The Guardians, where they can call each other if they need someone to escort them from one place on campus to the other place on campus. They are afraid to walk on campus. There's a student who, whose parents, he's from Belgium, and his parents have begged him to come back home because he's not safe. And he asked me, what should he do? And after a long conversation, I said, I think you should go back home. I recorded everything. All of it is in my social media, Instagram and Twitter. And I don't want people to listen to me. I want them to listen to the facts and make out their own mind. But you have to listen to the Jewish students. You have to look at the videos. You have to look at the pictures and not just take secondhand accounts about the story.
Again, I mean, other than, you know, barring you from campus and advising, it seems, Jews not to be on campus because they can't guarantee their safety. What are the authorities? I know, we're recording this, as I've said, on Wednesday. The administration are involved still in negotiations with these protesters. You just said there's no Jewish students represented. What's your expectation, at least, about what may happen in the next few days? And how on earth, in the longer term, does that administration rebuild the confidence of Jewish students that this is a safe place for them to be?
So first of all, when we talk about the administration's action or inaction, it's not just the past few days, it's the past 6 months. And I want to tell you something that may or may not shock you, because you know I've been very vocal for 6 months now. The president of Colombia has never reached out to me. And I've sent her dozens of emails, she's never replied. And not only that, none of the trustees, including the two that testified in front of Congress, Claire Shipman and David Greenwald. So when you think about what are the actions, keep that in mind. What needs to be done is what I've been saying that needs to be done for very, very long time. You know, they need, right now, if they cannot peacefully disperse the crowd and dismantle the illegal encampment, then they need to let the NYPD do so. And the NYPD is willing to do so. They've said that. The other thing they need to do is permanently ban the radical organizers from campus, dismantle the organizations that are behind this, the supporters of Hamas. They need to sanction every one of these organizations has a faculty advisor, sanction their faculty advisors. They need to deal with the actual supporters of terrorism in the faculty. And I don't know how they can do that, but they need to deal with the Joseph Mossads, because if not, this will just keep happening again and again. They'll keep indoctrinating students into hatred. And they need to make campus safe for everyone. Not just for everyone, but the Jews, for everyone.
Can they do that while allowing people to? I mean, again, obviously, this is the question. And we've seen this famously, spectacularly mishandled by the Harvard president, the hearing back in December. And again, there's so much extraordinary hypocrisy by these campuses that have basically barred people who have certain speech, but not others. But there is a question, isn't there? And again, I absolutely take your point that this is being led by extremist, terrorist supporting groups. But there are also, again, you'll acknowledge, there are people who would want to protest against, and believe me, I've written many, many times in defense of what Israel has done and what Israel is doing. But I think there's a legitimate reason for people to say, I want to protest against the actions of the Israeli government. There should be an opportunity for people to do that. But how do you create that space?
But again, this is important that you not just like ask the questions, but fit them to the information I've been giving you. They started on October 9th.
No, I understand that.
No, and this is important because when we talk about, you can protest Israel's government, you can protest Israel's policies. I've personally protested Israel's government multiple times over the summer. I got punched in the face by a police officer in Israel for protesting for democracy. I know what it means to protest a government. They are not protesting Israel's government. They are protesting Israel's right to exist.
I mean, actually, in a free speech environment, they're even allowed to do that, aren't they? I mean, the question is when they equate...
No, because no? Here's the thing. Yes, they are allowed. But you and I would not have had this conversation if this was the KKK and all black students would have run away home and fled campus. We would not have this conversation if this was the West Baptist Church exercising its free right to bash homosexuals and all the LGBTQ community would have fled campus. We would not have this conversation if this was the Proud Boys and all liberal students, meaning basically everyone, And all the Democrats on campus, meaning basically all the faculty in this so-called diverse environment, would have fled campus. The only reason we're having this conversation is that the targets are Jews. And we need to be honest about that. If we want to have journalistic integrity, then we need to be honest about that. That's the only reason.
I do agree. And again, I find these waves of anti-Semitism we've seen sickening and disturbing. But I'm just trying to say that from a university campus perspective, they do have to accommodate people with expressions of anti-Semitism. Absolutely not. Expressions of vile statements of hatred? Absolutely not. People coming out even saying, which I 100% disagree with, Israel is committing a genocide. Yes, people should be allowed to say that. I don't agree with it, think it's wrong, but they should be allowed to say things like that. They should certainly be allowed to say Israel is doing things it shouldn't be doing.
What about Israel's committing genocide? We're allowed to say, so no Israelis on campus.
No, of course not. Of course
not. That's what they are saying.
I know that, but where do you draw the line?
I don't draw the line.
Obviously,
I don't draw the line.
Very much in the thick of this, and you're rightly and bravely standing up for the rights of Jewish students. A university does have to draw the line. Clearly, statements of hatred, statements like that are absolutely unacceptable. But
let me answer, and I'll tell you, I don't draw the line. The university has a line. It only has two different lines. They have one line when it comes to non-Jews, and another line when it comes to Jews. The university, 3 years ago, when the chair of the psychiatry department at the Columbia Medical School tweeted on his own personal social media account, tweeted an abhorrent racist remark, that person almost immediately lost his position.
Yeah.
The university has a line.
No, the double standards are so
obvious. The university would have drawn a very, very clear line if this was the KKK, if this was the West Baptist Church, if this was the Proud Boys. The question is not where do you draw the line, is why do you draw the line differently when the targets are Jews?
I accept that. Okay, fine, because we're running out of time, unfortunately.
But yeah, sorry.
This is absolutely fascinating conversation, and I applaud what you've done and what you're saying. But just finally, what do you do about the larger problem here? So we can talk about the issues of absolutely forbidding this sort of hate speech and the hatred that is going on, and the university is taking action to deal with that. But you've just described, we have these universities that are full, students, faculty, whole swathes of administrators all committed. We didn't get into the whole DEI stuff. What do you do about, frankly, this moral rot in these universities? I mean, we're starting to see, which I applaud, people, wealthy donors refusing to give money to these universities. We're starting to see some state-level interventions to protect, you know, in certain states, to protect people who are suffering this sort of discrimination, particularly people like Jews in these circumstances. What on a wider level do we do, given how advanced this rot in our universities has become?
I don't know. But you know what? We're not even there, because most universities and most politicians and most Americans don't even realize that the problem needs to be done. Because clearly, I've always been a liberal. Not as a liberal as a political statement, just in my values. I don't make my values based on what I see, based on the where the wind blows. I base them on who I am. And they tend to mostly align with moderate liberals. But, you know, I have some moderate conservative views about me, and I think that's democracy. You have to have everything kind of mixed together. But most people in the university, we have, in every university out there, there's diversity of experience, there's diversity of demographics, there's diversity of background, a lot of very, very important aspects of diversity. The only thing that's missing is diversity of thought. There's no diversity of thought. This is how you get. So, by the way, I want to be challenged by someone who completely disagrees with me. I want to be challenged by someone smart, intelligent, a professor, many professors, so that I can make my own views more intelligent, better formed. But colleges are not doing that. That is how we got here. It's a bigger issue that will have to be dealt with, not just when it comes to Hamas. This is just a symptom. Jews are always just the canary in the coal mine telling you, democracy, it's coming for you. And if you just need to open any random book about the history of Germany, the history of the USSR, the history of almost every time they came for the Jews, it's because they came for society.
Well, on that disturbing note,
I'm sorry.
No, but a very important and one we should all remember. Shai Davidi, Assistant Professor of Business at Columbia University, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for telling the stories to Jewish students. That's the most important thing.
Well, you've told them, and you've told them, as you said, on your social media, your website, and I really urge people to go and read them.
All right, thank you so much.
Well, that's it for this episode of Free Expression. I'll be back again next week. In the meantime, have a great week, and thanks very much for joining us.